You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 70 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. And we are joined today by a special guest, probably the most fitting third Pelton brother in some weird way. It's our cousin Katie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Joining us to talk about burgers and also about Husky football, and we'll be here throughout the podcast.
And wait, I have more that I'm here to talk about.
Oh, what is that?
I have a grievance to air. And I don't know, as an aside, I don't know if you guys remember when we all went to Mexico.
And aired grievances, yeah, of course, on Festivus.
In honor of Festivus. This is a shout out for Ben B so he can fill out his bingo card.
About being 10 years ago.
It's a family story, right?
Yes, yeah. It covers two things, so, I think.
We aired our grievances on the beach in Mexico, and then we didn't talk to each other for several days.
It was a really bad idea.
Yeah. Actually, the other bingo square is talk about a game from 10 plus years ago. So I'll note that while we were in Mexico, conveniently, the Sox only played one game. I only missed one game. They beat the Denver Nuggets at home, and I think we were able to watch it.
I have no recollection of this. I just remember the grievance and the wrestling.
Do you know I was in Mexico? The draft lottery that LeBron was drafted, or that the Cavs got the first pick to draft LeBron.
I did not know that. It'd be weird if I did.
I went to an internet cafe in Mexico to find out the results.
Nice.
Because I was hoping that the Sonics would have gotten the first pick.
Spoiler
alert, they didn't.
They didn't jump all the way up from number 12 and number 14 to get it.
Two shots!
No, they only had one shot. 14 was a playoff. It was a playoff.
Oh, okay. So what's your grievance here?
My grievance is...
You're going to have to talk a lot closer to the mic.
That's a grievance is that I have. disregard and disrespect that this podcast has shown to the show Ballers on HBO.
More specifically,
the third season?
To the critically acclaimed third season of Ballers on HBO.
I thought Tristan wanted to call it the Emmy Award winning third season of Ballers on HBO.
Future Emmy Award winning.
And I found out that that's not the case. They did not win an Emmy last year.
Going to win an Emmy.
But The Rock did win a People's Choice Award for Favorite Premium Series Actor.
Oh,
and so if you can figure out what that means.
That is such a specific award. Yeah. But clearly he means he beat out everyone in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, must
have. So there you go.
And so, you know,
right off the top.
I'm upset about the fact that you guys don't talk about it because, you know, this podcast and Tristan more specifically kind of got me hooked on Ballers on HBO.
That's what I'm doing for people. This is a service that we're doing here.
I don't know if you remember.
Well, I'm a little worried about the spoiler alerts with the critically acclaimed.
Oh, are you?
We can't give too many spoilers for
Ballers on HBO.
The listener.
Here's a spoiler. The Raiders moved to Las Vegas. I know that the critically acclaimed third season of Ballers on HBO is a documentary, but we already know what happens in the end.
I mean, all right, if they are going to nominate it for your consideration for the Emmy Awards, clearly it's got to be the episode, the second to last episode, where there is a dinner at the house of Charles Grid.
I mean, that whole episode was... The most recent episode kind of let me down.
That one was not good.
I was on such a high
after
that episode. There's Ricky Jarrett going into some random house and punching the person.
Feel like there's more payoff to that story because I keep showing it in the what's happening.
You know, I was expecting that to come back because that was pretty amazing unto itself. But then also there's the dinner between the offensive lineman who's now in the front office.
Charles.
What's his name? Charles.
Charles Green.
And the coach of the team.
I don't know who he is. He looks like a poor man's Bill Belichick.
You know what my hot take is?
What's that?
I think the decision that was made in the last episode, spoiler alert, to fire him was a good decision. I think he's a bad coach.
Wow. Bad coach.
All he's doing is yelling at people. He's not a very win forever
GM,
philosophy.
Though?
That
guy is very grumpy.
No, they should both be
Seifert.
Fired.
Seifert. So just Seifert.
Did you know that Dulé Hill is, I believe, engaged to Jasmine Simon?
I learned this yesterday.
The actress who plays Julie Green said
wow.
That.
And that's why it was so awkward
weird.
That dinner.
That is very weird.
Charles Green had no idea.
He was fine the whole time, though. He's just a friendly guy. But when when the coach shoves Seifert's face into the food, I mean, that was unbelievable, right?
Emmy Award-winning stuff.
No, that was great, but I really think the best episode was maybe the second one where The Rock decides to get in a monster truck and then crashes and says that he's going to bring football to Las Vegas. I thought that was just amazing stuff. Yes.
I love when I'm at a monster truck rally and people who are like minor celebrities, they get to take the mic in the middle of the rally. After they crash the monster truck, everybody's fine. There seems to be no concern. And then they hand them a microphone.
And ask him what his next move is.
That's why I expected to get to take the mic at some point during the big three.
Yeah, you're a minor enough celebrity at the big three. Did Ice Cube get on the mic at all?
Sadly, no. It was only Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh, Sir Mix-a-Lot did? Oh, because he performed.
He was performing, yes.
Wow, an Ice Cube.
But also an impromptu rant about how the Clippers were coming to Seattle because LeBron James was going to sign with the Lakers. I don't know if that got reported on Twitter.
Wait, that really happened?
That's a thing that happened.
Why did you not tell us about this last week?
I don't know.
Sir Mix-a-Lot is delivering NBA rumors?
Yep.
And you didn't report on this?
I mean, I don't want to get people's hopes up on the whole Clippers thing because it's not happening.
Wait, this was more than just a Clippers to Seattle rumor. This was a LeBron to the Clippers plus the Clippers to Seattle rumor.
Although,
oh no.
I don't know if you've listened to the most recent episode of the Basketball Friends. Former college basketball star Black Trey breaks the news that LeBron will not be going to the Lakers.
Wait,
on that pod. Yeah.
Really? They talk. Why? The most shocking thing about it is
no insight given.
Oh.
He just not going to the Lakers. But the most shocking thing is not that he was breaking the news that LeBron isn't going to the Lakers. It's that they talked about basketball.
Hell yes. It was brief. It was short-lived. I thought you were going to say it's that LeBron is not going to the Lakers, which would be shocking.
Well, I've heard from a lot of really credible sources that he's going to the Clippers and they're moving to Seattle.
No. He's going to the Lakers.
Oh.
And because the Clippers will be so overshadowed. Also, I'm sorry.
I see the logic.
The full thing here was Sir Mix-a-Lot said that they were going to sign LeBron, Paul George, and Russell Westbrook, which I'm afraid is not possible giving those guys all max salaries. I don't want to get too technical on the salary cap with Sir Mix-a-Lot, but those guys are going to have to take pretty significant pay cuts to make that
happen. It happened in Miami. They'll figure it out. You think Magic's not going to figure it out?
He's going to do it.
There's a secret slush fund involved. All right. Anyway.
LeBron's going to get paid the minimum salary and get a piece of the ownership share of the Lakers.
That's not legal.
That's not legal?
No. Nope.
He's going to get an under-the-table piece of the ownership share.
Plausibly legal. But we're getting far afield from Ballers.
Critically acclaimed third season of Ballers on HBO.
Do we have any more takes?
I was just really let down by this most recent episode, to be honest.
You didn't get anything out of evil Steven Weber?
Where did he even come from?
And then we're supposed to be surprised that the CEO of Anderson Financial is an Anderson?
It's a strong point. I think it was mostly just a case for a situation to set up, like Brett Anderson, Mr. Anderson, the head of Anderson Sports Management. He's like,
you know a lot about these characters.
All the characters' names.
Such a powerful figure normally on the show, and to see him like kind of put in his place by his brother, I think was what they were going for.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like this podcast, actually.
Who's putting whom in the place?
Usually I'm the one who's powerful on other podcasts, and then I come on here.
This week there are two Carcinos and only one Pelton.
That is very true.
This is the first time that you've been outnumbered.
All right, we've talked way too long about the critically acclaimed third season of Ballers on HBO. Should we talk about the beer we have this week?
Yeah, we've got a lot of them.
Well, there's three of us.
A triumvirate of beers. So first, this is the beer
big
that's
three.
Not. Oh, there we go. Shouts to Sir Mix-a-Lot. By the way, is Sir Mix-a-Lot going to be at our live show?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
He's not going to be a guest of ours.
No.
This is not a situation like Men in Blazers where we tease Sir Mix-a-Lot being there and then he's actually there.
No.
He won't be there.
No, unless he's a listener.
Has he RSVP'd?
He is not RSVP'd, no.
He just can't get in.
So a reminder, our live show next Tuesday, September 5th at Vermilion in Capitol Hill at 7 o'clock p.m. Come on down. We'll have some standing room available for those of you who do not have the free tickets to guarantee yourself a
provided
seat.
Provided Sir Mix-a-Lot's posse is not too big.
That's a good
because
point.
We will be right off Broadway.
That is very accurate. And we may have stopped to go to Dick's.
Special guests like Danny Kelly from TheRinger.com.
Yes.
Surprises.
Maybe surprises to me.
Football talk. That's it. That's all there is. Burgers. It'll be the normal stuff with Danny Kelly there.
Third Pelton Brothers?
Also, everybody there will be a third Pelton Brother.
Oh. You're all third Pelton Brothers in our hearts. All right, what do we have to drink?
First, we have the Stone. You know, they do their Enjoy By series. And we have the Stone.
Well, people may not know that, actually.
It's beer that you're supposed to enjoy by a certain date. They also have the Enjoy After series for beer that you're supposed to age. This is not one of those. This is Enjoy By September 4th, 2011.
So we've had a few different varieties of the Enjoy By and Enjoy After. And the nice thing is that everyone is a little bit different. Even bottle to bottle, they're a little bit different.
And this is an unfiltered IPA, 9.4% alcohol by volume.
Should we read about this? So our all-important hop-driven quest to deliver the most devastatingly fresh IPA on the planet facilitated a paradigm shift in 2012 with the launch of Stone Enjoy By IPA. Not only did we brew the beer with more than 10 different hops, we brewed it specifically not to last. For this version of Stone Enjoy By IPA, we thought, we don't always have a filter, so why should our beer?
Ugh.
By skipping a step and letting this devastatingly, they've got a lot of devastatingly
pretty devastating.
Fresh, golden-hued double IPA go unfiltered, the beer takes on a hazy appearance and its peach and tropical fruit hop aromas are intensified. So though it may sound like it, this misstep was no misstep.
You know who also doesn't always have a filter?
Who?
Spencer Strassmore.
Oh, yeah. Great point.
When he went on that episode of some talking show in just a hoodie.
Oh, that was so great. Oh my God, that was excellent. That's the kind of TV I'm looking for.
It's The Rock in just a hoodie.
Yeah. I also like that this NFL executive just hangs out in wherever Spencer Strassmore is so that she could meet with him.
And then also from the Beer Camp series, we're going through two of these, and I think we might only have one left after this. It's a heavy beer night tonight. So first we have the dry hopped barley wine style ale in conjunction with Avery Brewing Company.
Okay.
From Colorado. I was looking to see where that was from. And the Beer Camp Dunkelweiss from Ayinger Brewing Company. I'm guessing that's one of the international ones.
You would assume so, but not necessarily.
From Bavaria.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, that's a good place to have some beer.
That's a good place to have a Weiss. So crack those open, and the three of us will each be trying a different one this week because of the fact that we have three of us on the podcast. So good to have the three different beers.
So should we get to what people have been waiting a long time for? And that's the final four of burgers.
I mean, it's here. Like, this is getting intense right now. So this week, two difficult semifinal matchups. First off, the number one seed in the bracket, Loretta's, taking on the upstart number four seed, You Need a Burger.
Okay, and so for that, that's why we welcome third Pelton brother, Katie, to help us settle that matchup.
You got
to
tell us about your burger credit. I mean, you don't have to tell us. We know your burger credentials.
I don't know if you really do.
Wow, okay.
Jeez. Maybe you do. You probably do, actually.
But the listener
Yeah, the listener needs to know. I was thinking about my burger credentials after hearing third Pelton brother Chris Smith on the podcast, where he said that he had eaten burgers in like six different states or something like that.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, I don't know if I can match that. I don't know if I could top that, but I have eaten burgers in at least two different countries.
Oh.
And you know what? This was something that was referenced in a pod on the Ringer Network that I was listening to last week, that David Chang was talking about how he ate a bunch of meatless burgers when he was in England.
Oh.
Because of the mad cow scare.
Wait. I ate a burger. My dedication to burger eating is so strong that during the height of the mad cow scare, I went to McDonald's in the Heathrow Airport in London and ate a burger.
And were then convinced that you were going to develop mad cow disease. What's the typical incubation time on that?
I think it's shorter than what it is.
23 years.
Yeah. You know, the Kuru disease has a 40-year incubation period, so it's similar.
Okay,
so,
well, you still got some time.
I was going to say, you know, we were flying to Italy on that trip, and our grandparents had taken us to Italy, and they would take you guys to Arizona for spring training.
Uh-huh. And yeah, really not the same. Okay.
I don't know who got the better end of the deal there, but they told us on this trip to Italy that we were, the fabulous Pelton brothers were much better behaved than us, not so delightful Carasino children.
Oh, wow.
So. Well, cheers to that. Look at our behavior. It's because it was like 130 degrees in Arizona.
It's also probably because we didn't have a 7-year-old with us.
And there was no Michael Carasino on your trip.
No Moogle. Yeah. I just remember getting so burned in Arizona that I couldn't do anything except for lay in the bed. We might have played war. Also, we were there with our grandparents' like 80-year-old friends.
I mean, they lived down in Arizona. We met them there. But one of my defining memories of that trip is like them fighting over the bill and then resolving, like, as an adult, I don't want to fight over bills like this.
No, that just doesn't happen in the same way, I don't think.
Well, now there's cash or Square.
Right, yeah, you can just split it much easier.
It's technology.
Also, we ate at Applebee's, which doesn't happen anymore.
Well, I went to Applebee's last week, so that's untrue. Did
you? Wow.
Your millennial status is taken away.
I know it is.
Confirmed Gen Xer.
We're millennials at best.
I'm definitely a millennial. Maybe
did you see the
friend.
Photo I sent you to, though?
No, about Applebee's?
Huh. I sent you a photo of drinking a Coronita.
No.
Oh, like
the
Coronita.
Is this something that Stephanie was talking about?
Yes, where it's margarita with a Corona in it. And so after that conversation we had, I resolved that I had to try it.
How was it?
I got to say, the Corona is not that great because then it goes into the, you've got ice in there and then it kind of waters down the Corona. So it's kind of problematic.
I want an oral history of how you ended up going to Applebee's.
A friend decided to go there for their birthday party, so all of us went to Applebee's for the first time in many years.
Okay. That's where I went for my 21 run, so.
There you go. It was not her 21st birthday, sadly. It was a higher number than that.
Okay, so we're going to have a lot of stories from 10 plus years ago.
Oh, we're knocking that out of the park this week.
So you had a burger in England at the Heathrow Airport, and that's how committed you are. I love that you've got notes. You are so much more thorough than anybody
else. These are all just notes on Ballers on HBO.
Pink and yellow.
What was the burger you had at the McDonald's in the Heathrow Airport? Was it good?
Oh, no, it was not.
Okay, so definitely not worth it.
But my dedication was strong. And I'd also like to, clarify at the outset that I think there was someone on your podcast who said he had a garbage palate. I can't remember who that was.
That was Eli.
Oh,
and I really respected his honesty there because, as the listener knows, Tristan has a very refined palate.
That's why he can't drink Coors Light.
I can't drink Coors Light. His lips recoil at the sight of it. So I do not have a refined palate.
Once a year I have Coors Light, when I win the Coors Light Silver Bullet Boss Award, the championship for Fantasy Football League, which I win annually, but go on.
totally forgot what I was talking about.
You don't have
garbage palate.
A refined palate.
I have, like, to use a 2016 phrase, I have a flaming dumpster of a palate.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
So it's really bad. Like, I enjoy a Totino's pizza all the way up to my stomach hurts about 2 hours later. So I just like to put that out there at the beginning. Whoever ultimately loses this thing, if it comes down to my vote, it's not you. It's me. So I just want the loser of this
to us. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I had a junior bacon cheeseburger from Wendy's yesterday, and I thought to myself, if this was served at a nice restaurant, I think I'd give it a 90.
A 90? JBC is pretty solid.
Look, if there was a pretentious restaurant that was serving a junior bacon cheeseburger, if it was like $6 instead of $1.29.
Had you been to Unita before?
I had. I think we've been there together. You look like you don't remember, Tristan, but we have.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't know if you were there, Al.
I definitely wasn't, because I went by myself, and then I've gone with Tristan the two times during the actual search for Seattle's best burger. That's it.
But my experiences with Unita were not so great historically. I was not a fan of Unita's burgers. And I realized why this time when I went there. I went there on Monday. I realized why I was not a fan of them.
Wait, did you go to both burger places on Monday?
I went to both on Monday.
Yes!
Nice.
Very nice.
I wanted to really treat this competition with the respect it deserves. Uh-huh. So I went to both on Monday. I did Unita for lunch and Loretta's for dinner. And I'd always thought of Unita as a cheese curd, fried cheese curd restaurant, because that's what is really delicious there. But I realized my problem with Unita is that I'd been lured into the fancy burgers.
Yeah, yep. You got to stay away.
And that was really my mistake. And I I'm not a cloth napkin burger either. I'm a paper napkin. And
that goes with the dumpster fire palette.
Yes, exactly.
Inevitably.
So I looked on the menu and I realized that the burger size of the patties at Unita is the third pounder for the fancy burgers, and it's just a quarter pounder for the classic.
Really?
And I'm not good at math, but Kevin, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's a smaller patty on the classic.
I actually didn't realize that, although the classic is what we've ordered the two times we've gone.
And I've liked it quite a bit more since we've had that. I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, the first time I went to Unita, I got a salted caramel milkshake, which was very intense. It was That's good, but like three sips were excellent. And rich. The remaining 40 sips, I almost threw it out the window. But also, I had a burger that had a fried egg on top of it.
Oh, God.
What was I thinking?
I mean, that can be quite good, as Red Robin has demonstrated. But yes, I feel like maybe that's a mistake people make when they go to Unita for the first time. I can't remember what I got the first time I went, but I know I didn't like it that time. And these last two times, it's been great.
Oh, okay, so we all had the same sort of revelation.
It's very similar.
Unita and getting the classic.
I've probably had things with fig on it before.
Oh, God.
Okay, so then what about Loretta's? You went there for dinner.
Okay, so I don't know if you remember. We've been to Loretta's in the past.
I do remember going to Loretta's in the past.
And I don't remember it really, but...
This was only your second time at Loretta's?
This is my third time. So the first time was several years ago. I think it was with you. I don't know if you were there. And you were actually talking...
You're pointing that people don't
sorry.
Know.
Oh, sorry. No, it was Tristan. I was there with Tristan. I don't know if Kevin was there. And
They can't tell our voices apart anyway. It doesn't matter.
And Tristan was talking up the Tavern Burger, and this was years ago, I think.
Uh-huh.
But
thank you.
I was in desperate need at that
time. I'm happy
time.
That there are witnesses for how long I've been enjoying the Tavern Burger. Yeah. We're going on like 8 years now.
I was in desperate need of a burger because I was in a state, you know, where I could have used some food to sort of...
Was this after that Arizona State game?
That's another time.
That was quite a time.
But... both times, I believe, the kitchen was closed.
Really?
So all this talk of this great burger and then disappointment because I don't get to have it.
Well, you don't have the dedication, apparently, of our cousin Chris, your brother, who specifically made plans to go to Loretta's after hearing about it on the podcast and went with me a few weeks ago.
Oh, that was his first time also?
I think so, yeah.
Wow. We're really bringing... dozens of people to Loretta's.
They don't want them.
No, they don't.
How crowded was it?
I mean, our grandpa is going to Loretta's on the regular.
Crazy.
At 95 years old.
People are buying him beers. It was the front end of the bar was crowded with older gentlemen, I would say.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then the outside was...
That checks out.
You know, sparsely populated, but it's still... That's a really nice outdoor area they have there.
It is.
I've never seen that before. That must be nice.
You don't see the outside area when it's like 1 o'clock after that Arizona State game.
That was November.
A notable drunken game. Like, that was two seasons ago. UW Arizona State, and we went to Fremont Brewing beforehand and got wasted, and then went to the zone at halftime. You were so mad at us.
I think this was one of the times when Kevin walked away from us at halftime.
No, I just stayed in the seats. I didn't go down to the zone with you guys.
I swear you walked away from us at one point in that game.
The zone is very dangerous. Like, we're going to be talking about Husky football later. The zone is very dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as dangerous anymore because they cut off the alcohol sales much earlier, right?
Oh, do they?
I think they changed something about it.
Yeah, to try to get people to actually sit in their seats at the start of the third quarter.
I both think that the zone is very dangerous and also think that is a travesty. But wait, I wanted to give the Boulevard Park credentials here because Katie's here. Like, we might as well. Our grandparents have been... This is how far back the casinos go in Boulevard Park.
Our grandfather. Grandmother doesn't go quite as far back.
Only back to 1948.
It's true.
Our grandfather, if he's 95 years old, what year was he born?
1922.
Was born in Boulevard Park.
Technically, he was born more in Georgetown.
There was a hospital in Georgetown at the time.
Well, he was born supposedly in the farmhouse.
He was born in the farmhouse,
Wow.
Yeah. So on the banks of the Duwamish River, which does in fact run through, I don't know. That's Boulevard Park.
That's not Georgetown. And where the farmhouse is?
I don't know.
It's Duwamish. But in Duwamish, our grandparents moved all the way from Duwamish to Boulevard Park. Our grandmother's from Queen Anne.
Yes.
She's a little bit fancier. In 1948, moved to Boulevard Park.
Built a house.
Before there was an airport.
That is accurate.
That is how far back our Boulevard Park credentials go.
Yeah.
So well, anyway,
we're not messing around when it comes to Boulevard Park.
In 1948, having my first Tavern Burger.
So what do you think after all this time?
I know all this talk is, I have a vote that I'm going to express, but I'm almost changing it right here.
You know, the Tavern Burger came in with a lot of hype behind it. I would say, you know, Tristan made the analogy of looking at this as like a game in the NCAA tournament. And that's kind of what I tried to do. I tried to look at each burger as it presented itself.
Head to head. Wow. Head to head. This might actually be happening.
I'm getting a little nervous.
I'm a little bit nervous too. Don't give your vote.
Yeah, you shouldn't do your
vote. I won't. I'm just going to talk about what I thought about Loretta's burger. It had for me the perfect bun meat bun ratio. I don't know if that concept has already been discussed on the show, and I'm stealing
it. But that's good.
It's got a 1-to-1-to-1. I call it, so you got the same size bun as the meat as the bun.
You developed this theory in the Heathrow Airport around 1995.
I like the special sauce. I like the onions. It kind of reminded me of the onions that you get at Shake Shack. I like the bun.
I mean, they were doing it, I don't know, I guess they maybe weren't doing it before Shake Shack.
But the one thing that I am not a fan of on the Loretta's burger is the char. And this may come back to
Oh, wow.
Like
that is
char.
A hot take.
You know, I said at the beginning, I have...
Handing myself off over here.
...a flaming dumpster palate. So that may just be my own personal hang-up. And, you know, other people might really like that char. But here's my thing with the
like
char.
Us.
Here's the thing. I couldn't taste the taste of the burger that I wanted to taste. I couldn't taste the special sauce. Because the char was a little bit too overwhelming. Huh. It wasn't a bad char, but it's just not my preference. On the Unita side of things, I realized from looking at your guys' pictures, I didn't get the same bun that you guys got.
Mm.
I had a bun with sesame seeds, which I really don't prefer in any case.
We probably asked for specifically without it because we went with your son who has food allergies.
This is the previous time. This is
the photo is from the first time.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So your buns look
how do our buns look?
So the buns in the photo looked really nice, but where I just had like a standard sesame bun and it was not that great, and I'm not really a fan of those. So that was my downside to Unita. I also looked at the price. You have a $6 for the classic at Unita with cheese, and then you have, I believe it's $4.50 for the tavern burger at Loretta's.
I know that price has gone up so much.
It really has, inflation. Back in 1948, it was a nickel.
I'm pretty impressed by this. When I went to Loretta's, I was able to get the tavern burger fries, which are hand-cut, according to some article in the Seattle Times I read.
And a giant thing of fries.
Yeah, huge! I could not finish them, and I felt really bad because I knew they hand-cut them. And
so it wastes their effort.
And Lucille. I had Lucille to drink. So and that cost $13.
I mean, yeah. Loretta's is great.
My stomach is churning right now.
All right, you're up first here.
I feel like I might need to change my vote. I just can't. Loretta's cannot be in the final.
All right, do you need Katie to go first?
No, I don't need Katie to go first because if we're looking at it head to head, we were sitting there at Unita Burger a week ago from today, and you said this could be Seattle's best burger. Ryan Rulin Smith was right next to us.
That is accurate.
And in his perfect Australian accent, he said that is the best burger in Seattle.
That is not accurate.
And I hate to do it because, as I just outlined, the 100 years of our family's history in the Boulevard Park, South Park area. But I'm going Unita.
Wow. I mean, here was my conclusion is...
I'm not going to try the Australian accent. No. I'm just going to try it again.
Don't, please don't. I mean, my conclusion was this might be the best burger in Seattle, but I think my conclusion was that it's a solid number two, and I would take it over either of the burgers in the other semifinal.
Yeah, so we've discussed this. This side of the bracket is the Western Conference Finals,
which might be spoiling next week.
Spoiler alert!
We don't know. Final. We don't know what's going to happen next week.
But
third Pelton brother question mark? Hopefully, Danny Kelly, if he says yes,
Loretta's is the perfect burger. I've had it. At least a half dozen times, I've had two of them every time I've gone, at least a half dozen times this summer, like dating back to May. And it has, every single time, it has delivered the goods. I don't know how I rated it so poorly when we did in the fall. It is one of the greatest regrets of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Loretta's is the winner
here.
Huge
mistake.
Without question.
Okay, so it goes to you, Katie.
That's a lot of pressure.
You're nervous. nervous
well,
too.
I went back and forth.
Well, it's either
there's
going to be a lot of pressure or it's going to be like Jim last week where you may as well not have shown up.
You know, I went back and forth, and you know, about an hour before the podcast, I was thinking Loretta's.
Oh no!
I need to stand right now. Too excited.
That the char was just a little bit too overwhelming.
Oh no!
And you know, you guys were talking about people saying it was Unita was one of the best burgers in Seattle. There was a guy, random guy, sitting next to me.
That was Ryan Reynolds.
Probably. Yeah.
He has not tweeted the accent. About anything about burgers. And by the way, said, I checked that out.
He said it was one of the top 10 burgers he's ever had in his life.
Wow.
I don't know. He could have burger experience all throughout the world.
He might have had a burger in London.
So I feel really bad about it, but I, you know, going back to the NCAA analogy,
this is a huge upset.
I see kind of Loretta's as like a Kentucky or someone that's a big, you know, favorite. They've got a lot of power behind them, and I see Unita as kind of like a Michigan State.
Let's be real here. Loretta's is like Gonzaga when they get a number one seed. It's like, good for them. And this is like in Kentucky, when they beat Wichita State the year Wichita State was undefeated in a one seed. That's actually what the analogy here is.
I think Dix is probably more like Kentucky, but
all right.
I guess when you're looking at all of them, but in this matchup, I think Loretta's is the big favorite coming into this. And I just think that Unita was well coached and put everything together, kind of like a Michigan State.
Wow.
I really did not see this coming. I was all prepared to pick Loretta's right through to the champion,
goes
and
down.
It's been upset.
You know what? I'll say, look, if Loretta's would have advanced through this round, I'm still a little bit taken aback here. If Loretta's would have advanced through this round, they clearly would have won the next round.
Yes.
But
now you don't know?
Now I don't know. So
all right, I'm going to have to go eat Unita and whatever burger wins on the other semifinal. On the same day, head to head, because I'm going to need that comparison.
So for the other semifinal, we have some bad news. We talked a lot about Loretta's. It was great. We recorded with third Pelton brother, David Sykes. There were some technical difficulties, and that was lost.
It was.
But I can say he said some beautiful things.
It was almost poetic, really.
You know what? I would have to say he delivered one of the greatest soliloquies in Pelton Cast history. He tied in his youth, Rainier beer, every single thing that you could imagine into his selection of Dix as the winner versus Lil Woody's. I had taken Lil Woody's. You took Dix.
And I think my take was very similar to David's in that, look, Dix is a Seattle fixture, an icon. And here's the thing. Think back on all the times you've been to Dix in your life. You mentioned like going there. It was a celebratory treat.
Yes.
As a child, have you ever once come away disappointed by your experience at Dick's? No, of course not. That's an insane thought. I waited in line for like 15 minutes at Dick's the other night because it was such a crowd before the Seattle Storm game that I attended.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. I would wait that 15 minutes anytime. Lil Woody's is awesome. Lil Woody's makes a phenomenal burger. I thought coming in they might win the whole thing, but I'm taking Dick's.
I don't know if I need to make the argument for Lil Woody's because they lost. We've already said that they lost, but I think...
You said that you wanted to say nice things about the losers on their way out of this bracket.
Burger to burger, if you put in front of me a Lil Woody and a Dick's Deluxe, I'm eating the Lil Woody's burger. I mean, I'm eating both of them.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
But let's say that they're both in front of me. I'm eating the Lil Woody's burger first. If you have to say I have to choose between one of them. You know, it's very no frills. To me, Dix is so reliant on the special sauce. I think the two patties together on the deluxe.
Wait. So reliant on the special sauce when the cheeseburger is great too?
Cheeseburger is good.
See, I really called you out on that.
I know. The cheeseburger is so good. I actually think the cheeseburger was kind of eye-opening last week. So maybe next week when we crown the champion of Seattle's best burger, maybe we'll have some Dick's cheeseburgers in the house.
I'm looking forward to going during bumper shoot.
Going to Dick's?
That'll be a good time to go to Dick's.
Man. I'm thinking Burger Cannon.
I feel like that's costly.
Is that happening at your live show?
Yeah, at the live show.
I want to not promise that.
So again,
that's costly.
Next Tuesday night, we will be crowning Seattle's best burger, and it'll be between Dick's, a Seattle institution, and Unita Burger, the underdog, the wild card. I need to go back. I have to go to both of these places before we crown a champion with third Pelton brother, somebody.
TBD. TBA. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited because now there's legitimate drama in this final. There wasn't going to be a Floretta's where it was in there. So that's the exciting thing of what happened tonight.
I can't believe Floretta's has fallen.
Should we talk about sports?
Man, it's been like an hour and a half.
All right, let's start with the Seahawks this week because of the fact that they're kind of not the focus this week as they head into the fourth and final preseason game Thursday night at Oakland on the strength of a 26-13 win at home on Friday versus Kansas City in a game that you attended. Any takeaways from being there, Tristan?
Nope.
any takeaways from Baby Fantasy Genius making his annual preseason appearance with you?
The dudes next to us, they were commenting that their girlfriends had said, it's two dudes who are there. Typically, it's three dudes. This was two dudes. They commented that their girlfriends had never been to a Seahawks game, demanded to go to a game. And they were like, so we brought them to the preseason. And I was like, that's why, you know. And then I pointed to the baby. I'm like, I get it. He also is like, Dad, did you know those guys? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, what were their names? And I'm like, I don't know, but they're close personal friends of mine.
You know how to high five them. That's the important thing. You don't need to know names. Like,
we hug every single time the Seahawks score a touchdown. I've shared some of the most deep personal connections that I've ever shared with anybody with those dudes. I just don't know what their names are.
Do you know the names of the guys, Kevin, that sit next to us at Husky Football?
I could figure it out if I had enough time to Google, but not off the top of my head.
Tall guy with long hair and his dad.
I feel like they're our friends.
For sure.
Great friends.
Yeah. You know what I remember is there was one time I was at Seafair and I saw one of the guys who sits next to us, and I was like, I know that guy. Where do I know him from? But it'd been almost a year since we'd been to a Husky football game at that point. So it took me I was 50 feet past him before I figured out, oh, that's who it was.
He's like a fringe college basketball player, right?
The guy who sits next to us played at SPU. His brother played with Orlando Johnson at some school in California.
Not Boise State.
No, I don't think so.
Did Orlando Johnson go to Boise State?
No, he went to UC Santa Barbara, but he transferred from, I think, Loyola Marymount is where his brother went. Mm. So yeah, they're very good basketball
players. These are people whose names we don't know. I was trying to explain
but
this
again,
to
I
Luca.
Could figure this out if I had enough time to look it up.
Yeah, I see why now. Yeah.
Anyway, someday Luca will come to respect that relationship.
Maybe soon, as he will be again sitting next to them at Husky games. On the injury front, several players for the Seahawks joining. Previously, it was KJ Wright and DJ Alexander had the Reginokine treatment, which is where your blood is spun and that is supposedly creates anti-inflammatory benefits for players who are dealing with injuries. But several players will be doing that this week and missing the final preseason game. Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett, Luke Jokel, Tyler Lockett, and Michael Wilhoit all out for that procedure.
All having their blood spun.
Yeah.
See that it's called going into the circle or something like that?
That's Pete Carroll's term for it now, which is strange euphemism, but okay. I'm good with it. It's unclear how helpful this really is, but there definitely doesn't seem to be any downside to it, and they probably wouldn't have played in the fourth preseason game much, if at all.
That's what I would like to see, not just these players not playing. I would like to see every single other starter not playing.
I know how you feel. Your position on this matter is well established.
But the fourth preseason game of all games. I mean, look, Russell was in there. This is the takeaway that I had from the last game. It was the last series that he took the big sack, right? The one play that Odhiambo...
That's correct. I mean, I think the reason teams like to do that is so you have the experience of going into the locker room at halftime.
Quarterback get destroyed.
And then coming out and then running a series after halftime, having made those halftime adjustments. That's what teams like to do in the third preseason game. I think one thing that may make the playing time different is now, in the past, there has been a cut down to, what was it, 65?
That seems about right.
Before the fourth preseason game, between the third and the fourth, now you've still got that full roster. Or down to 75, and now you've still got that full roster ahead of that fourth preseason game. So lots of reserves to get a chance to play and decide those final position battles.
So do you think this game will actually affect those battles, or it's funny because we talk about so much about how players perform in games, right?
Yes,
because we see such a small sample of what the coaches are actually seeing.
This is what I tweeted about a few weeks ago.
When they've been through how many practices do you think?
Probably at least 35.
So 35 practices plus OTAs, and then we're seeing
four games,
but also even just a snippet of four games.
Right.
It's not just that we're seeing a full four games from these players. We're seeing, for some people, a couple series against, you know, who knows. Like, JD McKissick is somebody, and we can start getting into the battles of these spots. JD McKissick is somebody who's looked, to me, really good playing on the field, right? Especially at running back last week.
That was a surprise and a pleasant surprise.
But also, you're like, okay, he's playing at the very bitter end of the game.
I mean, as I said last week when we had Mina Kimes on in a great episode and a great appearance by her, I think people pay too much attention to how people play and not enough attention to when people play.
Yes.
And that's where the fact that JD McKissick played ahead of Alex Collins.
Yeah, did Alex Collins play at all?
He played four snaps and did not have carry.
Okay.
The fact that he continues to return kicks with Tyler Lockett out, the fact that he was the third down back with CJ Procise out, all of that leads me to believe he will definitely be on the roster when that 53 is released, which is a change from where I was a week ago.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, then the question becomes, if you're keeping five running backs...
He's a half running back, half wide receiver.
I think at this point they're going to consider it. Well, you're not going to cut a wide receiver. You're going to have a lot. You're going to have six wide receivers almost certainly. So where are you not cutting, keeping someone else? Is that Joey Hunt on the offensive line? Is that keeping one less defensive lineman than we expect? That I think now to me is the question. Or is it not keeping a fullback?
So okay, for the fullback position, I think what we're going to see is I think that Trey Maddon is going to be released. Marcel Reese will also be released and then re-signed once the season starts to not guarantee the contract.
Yeah, that would be a possibility. They could also just keep Trey Maddon for week one, bring back Reese after week one for the same things, same reason. And the other aspect of it is, I think you have to think about it, it's not just necessarily the 53 best players. It's also who's least likely to get claimed off waivers. No one is going to claim Marcel Reese off waivers. He was out there all summer and no one signed him.
Yes.
So that's another reason, I think, to potentially consider releasing him.
I think it's very likely that Marcel Reese is not on the team in week one, and it's very likely that he ends the season on the team.
I would agree with both of those. Quarterback didn't seem like it was a competition after the first 2 weeks, where Trevon Boykin played very well, had played well in camp, and then he delivered about as bad of quarterback performances as possible, 0 for 6. And Austin Davis played pretty well after he came in, and suddenly we maybe have a quarterback battle. Now, this is where, to your point,
that's
Carroll
what I was
said,
say.
Yeah, don't read too much into those six throws, especially because he talked about it being a team issue as opposed to necessarily a Trevon Boykin issue. But boy, that was bad.
Well, I mean, it's weird because we're judging these small samples, but we're also judging the most recent small samples.
But to me, what it is that performance was so bad that you cannot risk possibly having that if, God forbid, Russell Wilson decides to quit playing. Yes. And full-time cheer for Floyd Mayweather.
I think Floyd Mayweather retired.
It doesn't matter. I don't want to talk about injury. That's my scenario.
Yes.
Where he has to play. I mean, obviously, the real solution is still out there.
Well, yes.
This guy is outside.
I do agree with you, though. Trevon Boykin, I think, will probably win this battle against Austin Davis.
Probably.
If Russell Wilson were to not be the starter going into a week, especially an extended period of time, I don't think it'd be Trevon Boykin who would be the quarterback.
Yes.
I just don't like the idea of the Seahawks leaving Kaepernick out there as this idea that they could pick him up. And I think a lot of teams are doing this. This idea that if something happens, they could go get him. Because somebody's going to go get him.
Are they?
That's an open question.
I mean, yes. I think there's also a good chance that Colin Kaepernick starts a game in the NFL this season.
Someone had a list of the quarterbacks who are about to start, who are going to start in week one.
I saw that.
Did you see that? Oh, it's bad. It is so bad. Like the Colts? Like, what are you doing?
Who is their starter? I still think it's Jim Sorgi. It's not Jim Sorgi.
It is definitely not Jim Sorgi. I want to say Dan Orlovsky, and I don't think it's that either.
Him too. Okay, so what about a wide receiver, though?
All right, so you have probably two spots available. Look, Jermaine Kearse is almost certainly going to make the team.
Yeah, I don't think Kearse is really a question mark.
Pete Carroll continues to praise him, was the leading receiver on Friday with 3 catches for 58 yards.
Nice. Were you excited about this?
I wasn't watching the game, but when we rewatched it on Sunday.
Wait, did you?
Hashtag Curse Crow.
You rewatched it on Sunday just to get yourself into regular season form.
Yeah.
Oh, also the announcers. Did you hear any of this? The announcers were off. At one point, they called Jimmy Graham Jason Williams.
I did not catch that.
It's like intended for... This was not the announcers like Kurt Menefee. We're talking the in-game, the PA announcer.
Oh.
They were very off.
I assume that's a spotter issue. That's actually not a PA announcer issue.
Okay.
Scott Tolzien, by the way, is the Colts starting quarterback.
No,
Scott,
he's not.
Yeah, with Andrew Luck injured, he is.
Wow. Okay.
That's not for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for the Colts.
No.
So Tanner McAvoy,
Katie's nice. Here to deliver her reaction gifts in person.
Tanner McAvoy, a really strong game on Friday. Kaysen Williams Bad night for the casing crew. Fairly invisible with, I think, one catch for 4 yards.
I almost thought...
And Amara Darbo, still no catches in the entire preseason and a pretty bad drop on Friday.
But that article came out by, I think it was Bob Condotta, saying that he's pretty much...
pointing out that no pick that high has been released in the last, I think it was 5 years that Condotta considered in their first training camp. I don't know. I have no idea what to think here.
If there's any team who is willing to cut the cord on somebody that quickly, I think it's the Seahawks. I think there are other teams who are not understanding sunk cost as well as the Seahawks are. Who was the guy they drafted? I think it was Chris Harper, right? He was a 4th round pick.
Yes.
And they released him in his rookie training camp.
Like, that's right.
It's not that big of a difference.
But it is a pretty big difference because, again, 4th round picks sometimes get cut. 3rd round picks, at least as hard as Darbo, never get cut. The other aspect is, to go back to my point earlier, who's going to get claimed off waivers? Is Tanner McAvoy going to get claimed off waivers? I don't think so. Amara Darbo, probably.
I think Tanner McAvoy will get claimed off waivers, but...
I think that's a factor in the decision, though.
Yes.
We'll see. And also, I like Tanner. I want to be clear for the... for the Tanner McAvoy militia? Is that what we settled on?
I don't know how comfortable I feel about that.
Yeah, I feel that's not
no,
good.
No, I don't think you can do that.
He's basically above the law.
The Marauders? Is that a word?
Tanner McAvoy team. That's a little too close to the Mayweather team. I like him. I think he's a good player. I'm just not sure he's going to make the roster.
Yeah,
those are two separate things.
Anything that I've said about Tanner McAvoy is not about him as a player. It's about my perspective about what's going to happen. It's more Nostra Tristan happening and less what I would do personally. But the thing is, it's like we're talking about the future here, but we're also talking about the 6th wide receiver spot.
Yes.
This is not somebody who's going to play that much, and... it probably makes more sense to keep Amara Darbo because of whatever potential they saw before the draft, whatever the reason was that he was drafted that high, and he can meet that potential next year. Really, they're not going to play that many wide receivers this year that often.
Right.
So.
All right, next question is the last couple spots at linebacker. You have the aforementioned DJ Alexander, who has yet to play during the preseason, but his special teams value, I think...
seems like a lock to me.
Dewey McDonald and then Marcus Smith, who's kind of a linebacker defensive end hybrid.
Marcus Smith.
Has he flashed at all in the preseason? I liked the idea of Marcus Smith.
I think it's Dewey McDonald who is out.
Well, we'll see. I have no strong feel there. And then the last couple cornerback spots. Is Tremaine Brock a lock to make the team?
Yes. Tremaine Brock is a lock.
He's been playing very early in these preseason games.
Tremaine Brock is a lock.
All right. Pierre Desir, Nadir Thorpe, and then Mike Tyson.
Nico Thorpe.
I call him Nadir.
Nadir Thorpe. Is that a person's name?
No, it's not. It's just a,
that's
it's
just what you're going to call him when he's released. He's reached as Nadir.
Or do you keep 6 of those guys because you do have a lot of depth?
How many people can they keep? Could they keep all these players?
No. No, not realistically. That would be... because there's 3 locks at cornerback and 4 if you count Brock. Obviously, Sherman... Jeremy Lane and Shaquille Griffin.
Man, I want to keep all these players.
Look, you want to keep... I mean, look, you get excited about lots of guys, but you have to make these hard decisions. That's what the
Mike
final
Tyson
roster
is the
about.
One who we haven't really seen anything from, right?
Not much.
But, and it seems like he hasn't been playing that early. I thought Pierre Desir, haven't really noticed him recently, but I think I remember in week 1 him playing pretty well. Nico Thorpe is integrated into the system, understands it. I think I would be surprised if they released him.
Okay, and then will the Seahawks, in fact, keep 5 safeties to keep... obviously, the 2 starters, McDougald, and then this year's 2 rookies, Hill and Thompson.
That's a tough one. They kind of put themselves in a difficult position here with signing Bradley McDougald, who they're obviously going to keep, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And who it makes me feel better about the prospects, again, knock on wood, if Earl Thomas were to quit football, right?
If Earl Thomas were to quit football after last year's injury. You wanted to live up to that year.
He makes me feel a little bit better. But the 2 rookie safeties, I don't personally feel like I've seen anything from either of them.
I feel like Hill's played generally pretty well. I would disagree with that.
I mean, I think we can both agree that Hill is more likely than Thompson. Would I be shocked if they kept 5? No. Would I be shocked if they released Ted Thompson? No.
Does he go by Ted?
Tedrick. I'm calling him Ted. Look, we're friends.
You're in them. So a couple of last, wrapping up on the Seahawks, a couple of good news, pieces of good news on the injury front. Frank Clark had a bit of a wrist injury in the previous preseason game. Visited a specialist on Monday, and Pete Carroll said on Tuesday he's expected to be ready for the start of the season. And then CJ Procise, after so much hand-wringing.
I don't really understand what happened. It was like, he's missing a preseason game. Who cares? It's like, oh, CJ Procise can't stay healthy. It's like, you don't push it for a preseason game.
has returned to practice. So
are we not seeing what is happening?
He'll be fine. Well, he may not be fine, but
at all, you don't play in a preseason game. Look, am I nervous about CJ Procise's health? Sure, but if you are mildly injured, you don't play in a preseason game. They don't count. We'll not remember these games happened. Do you remember any preseason games from last year?
From last year? No, not really.
No. I remember like a Denver Broncos game from like 5 years ago, right?
I had some fire tweets about Tremaine Pope during that preseason game we attended last year. You know what I was wondering about?
Oh, yeah. And they'd recently selected a new Pope. So
the white smoke jokes.
The white smoke was on people's mind.
You know what I was wondering? Has anyone done, you know, the meme of the boyfriend checking out the other woman? Has anyone done that with Chris Carson and, I guess, Tremaine Pope?
I've seen that.
But you could do Alex Collins. You could even do Thomas Rawls. Because it feels like all of a sudden, Seahawks fans are very into Chris Carson.
I tried to fight it, too. I mean, you've
leaned into it. But then you drafted him in the 11th round of our fantasy.
I because he's played really well. I mean, everybody ran the ball well last week, right?
That's true.
The one who still seems like a question mark to me, and I love Thomas Rawls, right? But I just don't know if Thomas Rawls is going to be what he was in his rookie season again.
No, I mean, the odds are overwhelmingly against that.
I think that
he doesn't need to be that, though.
I think that
Pete Carroll was better. I thought he, you know what? I was looking at the Football Outsiders Almanac. He was better last year than I realized.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was above average in DVOA, and I didn't realize
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes me feel a little bit better.
So,
but I do think that it's not just Seahawks fans who tend to get enamored with exciting running back prospects. I think that the team does as well, and I think Pete does too. I mean, he's still looking at Thomas Rawls as that player who he was 2 years ago.
Okay, so he's still checking out Thomas Rawls?
But it could be Chris Carson this year, midseason.
Or earlier. Could be week one.
It's not going to be week one.
It could be. All right, should we talk about basketball?
Oh, I'm so excited.
All right, first up, an update on the Big Three.
Not about this. I'm excited about something after
Sadly,
this.
Sadly, Rashard Lewis and Gary Payton, their team, the Three-Headed Monsters, lost to undefeated Trilogy in the final Saturday in Las Vegas in the biggest sporting event of the day in Las Vegas, the championship.
Did they realize that it was going to overlap with...
I'm not sure what the timetable was, but they probably scheduled it before the fight was scheduled. I mean, it was good in terms of getting celebrities.
It wasn't at the same time,
was it? No, it was in the afternoon.
So you could have done a doubleheader.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Definitely would have done that.
I'm assuming Ice Cube did a doubleheader. He was dressed wearing a suit and then the Big Three hat. So he definitely, as someone joked to me on Twitter, looked like someone who had just gotten drafted. It was great, though. In Seattle Arena news, Oakview has launched a website for their Keyan Arena renovation project. And the most notable thing here, besides the fact that their timeline for the project does not link to anything at all, even after I mentioned it on Twitter, still doesn't.
How much sway do you think you have?
I feel like I should have enough to fix a typo on
your
website.
Kate Pelton is angry about this.
Their team.
Maybe the timeline doesn't exist.
That's the point. So take it off the website.
Oh, you're saying they should have taken it off.
Yeah, it's a bad look. Their quote team on the ground.
Bit of insider.
Is Aaron Levine from Q13 Fox reported over the weekend includes Emily East from CBE Strategic, who is the consultant paid $185,000 by the Port of Seattle to lead their efforts to fight against the Soda Arena and in favor of a Keyan Arena renovation. And then also Jeff Reading of Strategies 360, whose previous job before that was he was the communications director for Mayor Ed Murray. Isn't that convenient?
Jesus Christ.
So are we able to get real here about this?
Yeah, we're able to get real.
I'm not real we're about to get.
But I mean,
to a point. Let's not get too real. Sometimes keeping it real can go wrong.
That's true. I'm just wondering how much do we believe the Key Arena group about their desire and ability to get an NBA team?
I mean, I don't have any questions as far as their ability to get an NBA team in terms of, like, you know, they obviously have strong ties within the league. I mean, I do think there are questions about how much in terms of sharing profits with an NBA team, how much they're going to desire it. I think that's a fair question.
That's the real issue here, is that to bring the NBA back, and this is why I've been against Key Arena all along, right? This particular proposal for Key Arena is that to bring the NBA back, you need an owner who's going to own part of the building. Why would you, as an NBA owner, want to be a tenant?
That's a great question.
Is that the model that's happening? Steve Ballmer buys the Clippers and then wants to build his own arena.
In fairness, the Lakers are also a tenant at the Staples Center, which was built by AEG under Tim Leiwicki's guidance.
The Lakers are a tenant too?
Yeah, everyone is a tenant. AEG owns the Staples Center.
Man.
Now, I think AEG may have a small share of the Lakers, but they're not, I mean, obviously the buses are the primary owners. They don't own the Staples Center.
But in general, the model for the NBA has been to try to build the arena and own the team yourself. Own both.
Yes.
Because you make a lot more money that way.
And an interesting note, this is another substantive news item that came out of their website. They noted that Leiwicki is scheduled to be part of the NHL ownership group. But no reference to the NBA ownership.
They do not care about bringing the NBA.
It just says that Leiwicki and David Bonderman, who would be part of the NHL ownership group and is a minority owner of the Celtics, would work with the NBA to find a suitable NBA ownership group.
It makes me nervous.
I don't understand the financials of how it's all going to work out if it's just going to be a music and
it's a much, NHL venue. It's a much better financial play if it's a music venue. Yeah. The arena makes more money on concerts, which is why, as we've discussed in the past, the Sprint Center in Kansas City, I mean, along with the fact that Kansas City is a tough market for the NBA and NHL, but that's why they don't have a tenant, because they're financially more successful just focusing on concerts and then hosting tournaments and things like that, including UW at Kansas this year.
Great. Right now, what you're talking about, the thing that we can see, the writing that we can see on the wall, is going to mean that we're not going to see the NBA in Seattle for a much longer period of time.
I mean, look, the NBA is not coming to Seattle imminently, no matter what happens. I do think that an owner who would be either an expansion owner or an owner considering moving their team would prefer to be at Soto Arena than at the renovated Key Arena.
It all of a sudden opens things up to other cities too, right? If it were the Soto Arena, Seattle is clearly number one on the NBA's list. But the way that they're doing this, look, they're number one on the NHL list. We'll get an NHL team no matter what easily, right?
You get an NHL team no matter what happens. I've been very clear about this, and I will remain
adamant about this. But the way that this is being set up, if there's another city who can offer a better plan to an owner, they're opening themselves up to it.
I mean, and that may be third-party, you know, ownership as well. I mean, Vegas, again, it's a case where a third-party operator built and runs the arena. So, I mean, it's not inconceivable. It's just a less palatable arrangement, let's say that. Should we move on to, speaking of the importance of moving quickly, because the possibility of bringing Kevin Durant back to Seattle.
It is not a possibility.
There's no way.
On the Bill Simmons podcast this week, Simmons says that many Sonics fans wrote in the mailbag that they did with Durant to ask, you know, would he consider returning to Seattle at the end of his career if there was a team back here? And Durant said, who knows? I feel like they deserve to see me grow up in the league, among other things. So
it's awesome. Kevin Durant's great.
I like that was kind of a shot at Oklahoma City a little bit, or at least at the ownership.
He was a little softer to Oklahoma City later, but
It's definitely, he walked it back a little bit.
It's definitely good for Seattle. I mean, there's a soft spot in Kevin Durant's heart for the city of Seattle. I feel very confident about that.
He was here for a short enough period of time for us not to have any backlash.
So speaking of the Sonics and the Thunder, a bit of news this week that I assume many of you saw. NBA 2K and their latest release, 2K18, is having all-time teams for each franchise. And their team for the Oklahoma City Thunder included many members of the Seattle Supersonics.
Mostly members. First off, if this deal hadn't been negotiated, if Greg Nichols, right, the mayor at the time, would have said, no, you can't have the history,
I mean,
would this have changed anything? Does that matter?
I mean, here's the thing. It's like, there's this whole thing about like, oh, Clay Bennett owns the history. No, Clay Bennett does not own the history. The NBA owns the history. Clay Bennett,
you can't own
licenses.
History.
Clay Bennett licenses the history from the NBA. Whatever the NBA says is going to be final on this issue.
But does that matter as far as 2K goes? Is that a factor at all here?
No.
Okay, so I can't blame Greg Nichols for this.
I mean,
look, numerous other things I can.
2K can put whoever they want on there. That's like, you know.
Are they negotiating?
There's no obligation for them to.
Retired player?
I think it's whether you're a member of the Retired Players Association. And so that's why, for example, Brandon Roy wasn't on the Portland all time roster. And pretty clearly, it's because of the fact that he wasn't eligible. It's not
because
they actually.
Sonics roster.
So the roster for the Sonics / Thunder team was Payton, Westbrook, Allen, Durant, and Kemp as starters, and then a bench of Haywood, Dennis Johnson, Jack Sigma, Dale Ellis, James Harden, Xavier McDaniel, Lenny Wilkins, Tom Chambers, Detlef Schrempf, and Serge Ibaka.
So what you're saying is if we were to purchase NBA 2K, right, and play a game as the classic Thunder franchise, we would see players like Xavier McDaniel and Spencer Haywood in a Thunder jersey that they never wore.
That's a little bit gross.
That is correct.
They should have considered this.
The thing here is
we should have Pasta Padre on. Do you know that guy lives in Seattle?
No, I did not know that.
We should have him on.
Here's my thing.
He lives in Seattle?
He's like the foremost expert on sports video games.
I mean, I'm looking at his tweet as I list off this all-time roster. He was the one who broke this news.
Shouts to Pasta Padre. Yeah. I downloaded his roster in NCAA football back in 2011.
Still going strong with that. So here's the thing is I don't feel like anyone is happy about this. Obviously, Sonics fans are extremely angry about this, but it's not like Thunder fans they feel a kinship with Peyton.
They're not wow, Spencer Haywood was a great Thunder player.
No, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean,
it is.
And you could make a pretty decent Thunder all-time roster.
Just make a Thunder all-time roster. Put Nick Collison on there.
But you wanted to know what the all-time Sonics roster
is. Let's do a real one, though.
And I did a 12-player roster. I actually had not realized until I just double-checked that they had 15 on their roster.
Oh, add three more. You can't come up with three more players?
I can come up with three.
Okay. Okay, so let's walk us through the real Sonics all-time roster.
All right, so at point guard, obviously, you have Gary Payton.
Okay.
At shooting guard, Ray Allen at this point, I think is a pretty clear choice if you're favoring peak value over Freddie Brown, who played longer in a Sonics uniform.
Who is not on the 2K roster.
That was kind of surprising to me.
And again, may not have been eligible or just may not have been chosen. At small forward, I went with Detlef Schrempf.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's certainly, if you're putting together an actual team, Detlef is an ideal choice as the small forward. Sean Kemp at power forward and Jack Sigma at center.
And he also is not involved.
Yes, again, could be that issue because that team. No, Jack Sigma was on the their roster.
Despicable.
Are we sure that this wasn't just some intern who didn't really know what he was doing who put this together?
It seems unlike it. I mean, again, this comes up all the time. With it's the first, the first 30-20 game in Thunder franchise history since, Sean Kemp or something like this. Look, this happens all the time. But again, I don't think it leaves either side happy about this. So for the bench, Lenny Wilkins, Gus Williams.
Also the coach.
Probably. You can make a strong case for George Karl being the coach of the team. You're disputing that?
No.
I mean, you can make a strong case for him. He probably can't coach the team after that book, then.
He's not coaching anybody after that. He's more likely to be on our podcast than to coach an NBA team.
Well, you should really set that up.
Yeah, he's the third Pelton brother, George Karl.
Fred Brown. Dennis Johnson, who was on that team. And I think a strong choice, even though he only played 4 years here. All-star twice. Most valuable player of the finals. And such a valuable defender in this kind of a conception. Then Dale Ellis, I think, has to make the roster. At small forward, went with, I don't think Rashard Lewis ended up on that.
Rashard didn't make that team. You have to have him.
Yeah. Again, we don't know whether he was eligible.
Stop mentioning that. This is a clear offense every single time a Sonics player wasn't on there.
All-time leader in three-pointers.
Serge Ibaka is on the team, but third Pelton brother, Rashard Lewis, isn't on there.
Xavier McDaniel. Tom Chambers.
Oh, Tom Chambers.
Spencer Haywood. And then Sam Perkins.
Yes.
Which was actually kind of a tough call. I initially did have Bob Rule in there because I felt like the 60s Sonics are a little underrepresented and he was a better player at his peak than Sam Perkins. But, it's Big Smooth.
Big Smooth. Wait, so you're adding three more, though?
That was the team. Chambers, Ellis, and the X-Man were the three guys I added.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't have them on originally.
That's a pretty good roster.
That is a pretty good roster.
I mean, where do you think this stacks up all time?
I mean, there's other teams that have a lot more star power. There's not an MVP caliber player on this team, but the guys fit together pretty well. There's a lot of complementary talent. If Gary Payton and Ray Allen, if they could play together in a backcourt, if those egos could coexist, that's a nice combo.
Plus Sean Kemp.
Yeah. And Sigma stretches the floor as a kind of a stretch five. So it's.
Did you have Durant on there, though?
No. I mean, just a 1 year. And he wasn't that good his year in Seattle.
I still think you should have Durant on there.
That's a tough call.
My toughest omissions were Brent Barry, who. Advanced stats loved Brent Barry. Led the league in true shooting percentage as a member of the Sonics. And then Nate McMillan, obviously, in terms of his longevity. He can be part of the coaching staff.
Yes. I think you should have Durant on the team, though. Who gets kicked off? Big Smooth?
Probably Tom Chambers.
Okay, give him Tom Chambers.
He still won a backup center.
He still played a year in Seattle. Look, his heart is in Seattle. He told us.
But he wasn't very good in Seattle. I
also heard that he scored 20 points a game in his rookie year. He would have played 35 minutes on this year's Celtics.
Yeah, that's true. Look, David Thompson is a Hall of Famer, and he played for the Sonics. But you can't put him in the all-time Sonics team because he was
that
good in
Seattle.
That's
not the same.
That is, David Thompson was way better in Seattle than Kevin Durant was. I didn't realize this to be the hot take.
I didn't know that David Thompson ever even played in Seattle.
He wouldn't.
I think arguing that Kevin Durant should be on there is different than saying like Patrick Ewing should be on there.
No, I don't think it is. I don't agree with that. Is Franco Harris on your all-time Seahawks team?
Number one, him and John Randall. okay. I think this was a very poor decision by 2K.
I thought you were going to say by me.
Very bad roster. They should have Russell Westbrook because they actually drafted him. There's the
they drafted Ibaka too.
I just think Durant should be on there, but it was a very poor decision by 2K.
I mean, they should have known the backlash was coming. Like, it was pretty predictable. All right, let's talk about the Sounders, who extended their unbeaten streak to 11 last week.
Nice.
In about the most disappointing fashion possible, with a pair of 1-1 draws on the road at Vancouver after taking a 1-0 lead against a Whitecaps team that was reduced to 10 men, but then gave up the equalizer in the second half and were unable to score. And then on Sunday, hosting the rival Portland Timbers in a match you attended, another game where took an early lead with a Christian Roldan goal, but then surrendered the equalizer in stoppage time in the first half with Diego Valeri PK and were unable to score in the second half.
And I think going into this weekend, if you would have told us that we would have gotten 2 points, it probably wouldn't look that bad, right?
Yeah, I think it would. I mean, my expectation for last week would have been...
They should have gotten four, but if they got two, it doesn't look bad.
I think it still looked bad. I think it always looked bad. The draw at Vancouver going in, I think, was a pretty good result, all things considered.
I mean, Portland is up there in the playoff standings.
But still, you're at home in front of 50,000 fans, and their track record with that, you know, full stadium match is generally very strong at home.
And I think the weekend left me with... And look, we know how much better the Eastern Conference is than the Western Conference, right? But the weekend left me feeling like the Sounders aren't a real competitor for the MLS Cup.
I mean, I don't know if anyone is a competitor with Toronto. I mean... But they weren't as good as Toronto last year, and you saw what can happen in a one-game setting.
They were probably closer, right? And I look at this attack on the Sounders, and I feel like there's something missing from the attack.
They created a lot of expected goals. They dominated in terms of expected goals in both of these games, particularly the Vancouver match.
The Vancouver match, there were a lot more balls, which, by the way, who's the guy who played Rodriguez?
Yeah, Victor Rodriguez making his debut.
Where did he come from?
So they signed him with targeted allocation money from Spain.
Okay. And so that was his first match against Vancouver.
Yeah, and he proved incredibly technically skilled. Was a great addition to the attack, I think.
And came on against Portland and didn't really do much.
Okay.
But it just felt like, I mean, sure, maybe their expected goals were good against Vancouver and they should have scored another goal. Right. It's just soccer. Sometimes you just don't score.
Right.
But against Portland, it felt like Portland was able to stop them from scoring a little bit too easily. There wasn't the onslaught of pressure that there was. Like in Vancouver, you saw the last 30 minutes, there was shot after shot after shot. Possession, possession, possession. Portland dominated possession in that match.
Yeah, I mean, it was a disappointing performance. I'm not going to freak out about it. Again, they're unbeaten 11 matches is still a pretty impressive run overall. Soccer Power Index now projects them in a dead heat with Sporting Kansas City for first place in the Western Conference and without a 50-50 chance of earning a first-round bye by finishing in the top two in the Western Conference. So after that stretch of three games in 8 days, the Sounders now off until September 10th because of the international break. So Clint Dempsey, Jordan Morris, and Christian Roldan all called into the USMNT roster as they host Costa Rica on Friday at 3:30 at 4 p.m. Pacific in a World Cup qualifier, and then travel to Honduras on Tuesday at 3 p.m. Also, I thought an interesting note, the first call-up for Nuhu, who has been playing at left back with Jovan Jones, leaving without permission to join the Trinidad and Tobago roster. He has been called up to the Cameroon roster.
Really?
I think 18 or 19, so that's good for him. All right. Also in disappointing performances in the past week,
Seattle Storm, in position to potentially claim home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, suffers an 89-83 loss Wednesday at Atlanta, and then a crucial matchup Sunday against Phoenix, the most likely team to get that sixth and final home court advantage in the first round, loses 75-71 on Sunday despite a career-high 33 points from Jewel Lloyd. And now the Storm no longer assured even of a playoff spot. They're at about 80% chances of making the playoffs with two games on the road this week to finish up. On Friday, they're at Washington, and then Sunday at Chicago, the team that's chasing them for the eighth and final playoff spot in the WNBA playoffs. So may all come down to that game after the Storm won by 30-plus in Chicago the last time, but were unable to maintain that momentum. With that noted, I think it's time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya. Okay, so it's only fitting that the Mariners season would end on Players Weekend. Because the only thing which was uglier than their play on the field was those jerseys.
Oh, they were bad. They were so bad.
And they committed 5 errors in 1 inning.
I kind of want to watch that inning just to see what it was like.
I tuned in on Sunday. And you know what I saw?
What did you see?
I saw a playoff contender, a World Series contender, and the Mariners. There was a team in the Yankees who made a deadline deal. They went out and they got one of the best starters in the league. Not someone coming off of Tommy John surgery who in 5 starts still has not made it through the 5th inning.
That seems not great.
He's at 4+ for 5 starts. Here's what it is.
What is it?
The Yankees are Mayweather.
Oh no.
And the Mariners are McGregor.
The Mariners have done pretty well for the fact that they used to be a football team.
They would be a pretty good football team. For a team that is changing sports, pretty solid performance. The Yankees are the Night King and the Mariners are the Wall.
I don't understand.
You don't get what I'm talking about. The Yankees are Chris Carson and the Mariners are a defense trying to stop Chris Carson.
I thought that was going to be Alex Collins.
I had a much more vulgar thing in there that involved Blake McDowell, but I didn't. I did took it out.
No idea where you're going with that.
It involved an ATV. The Yankees are the Yankees, and the Mariners are the Mariners.
Since 1977.
And to the Mariners fans who still think the Mariners have a chance to make the playoffs.
11.5% chances, according to Fangraphs.
Lower after today.
Oh, they lost. Okay.
Yeah, they lost again. Don't worry. It's 4 in a row. You're just being delusional. I've started noticing lately, I don't know if you've noticed this, hearing less and less about the Mariners. Have you noticed this?
People are shifting into...
All of a sudden, it's like, well, the Seahawks are playing a preseason game. The Huskies are about to start. People are realizing we don't need to care about the Mariners anymore. So on that note, let's talk about football.
You saying this is the end of Mariners hot takes?
No, it'll continue.
Okay.
It'll continue as long as there are takes to be had.
Well,
but this week we are talking about a real football game.
We are. Isn't that exciting?
We're talking about basketball from 30 to 40 years ago, our grandparents living in Boulevard Park for 100 years, and real football this week.
University of Washington traveling to the great state of New Jersey, really to New York, I guess, where they're going to Ground Zero. And then on Friday to play at Rutgers in the season opener at 5 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, nationally televised. Gus Johnson will be in the house.
Oh, Gus Johnson's in the house?
Yeah,
hopefully he makes the big 3 worth watching.
But, you know, Gus Johnson calls several Husky games last
year.
Most
heard
of them
Gus,
were not
Gus
that
Johnson
great.
Calling Sir Mix-a-Lot perfing at halftime? Because it is thrilling.
I guess technically no, because I was there for that one. The Huskies, heavy favorites in this one. They were 30.5-point favorites when I did this. They have since dropped to 27.5, which is probably more appropriate.
Tightening is happening.
Suspension news?
Yeah, presumably a big factor in that. The news that Azeem Victor named last week a first-team preseason AP All-American with defensive tackle Vita Vea on the second team has been suspended for the season opener for an unspecified violation of team rules. Also, cornerback Austin Joyner will miss the first 2 games due to a similar violation.
I was going to say Chris Peterson's harsh but fair, but he's just harsh.
It was weird because Coach P was like very complimentary of Azeem Victor and talking about his suspension, like downplayed it as much as possible, but he also suspended him, so I don't know what to make of it. I mean, here's the thing.
It's a violation.
Look, if this makes a difference, the Huskies have way bigger problems than Azeem Victor's suspension.
It's like he missed so many games at the end of last year. Just let him play, Coach Pete.
So, I mean, it does create a little depth issue at middle linebacker. Adam Jude of the Seattle Times reported on Monday that backup middle linebacker DJ Beavers has a foot injury that he suffered in fall practice that is expected to sideline him a month. So that means Ben Burkhervin will be making his first start at middle linebacker.
But he got quite a bit of experience last year.
Yeah. It's really more the depth behind him that has less experience. Brandon Wellington played limited snaps as a deep reserve last year. And then redshirt freshman Camilo Eifler looks like he could be in line for some playing time at middle linebacker in the opener.
And who I think we can all agree is going to be awesome.
It's interesting because he was
a nod of agreement from Katie.
He was previously listed as an outside linebacker, as kind of a rush linebacker in the Huskies scheme, but now apparently we'll play some middle linebacker here. So we'll see about that.
But the depth between, you've got Tevis Bartlett, Camilo Eifler, who is a highly recruited player who, by all accounts, looks very good in fall camp, right? Plus Ben Burkhervin, who has been on the field.
Yeah, I feel completely comfortable with Burkhervin.
Especially against Rutgers.
The other thing here is you're not necessarily, you're probably going to play a lot of nickel. You don't necessarily have two middle linebackers on the field at all times. That's the other aspect here, which gets to what you were saying about Victor being out last year. The other injury news this week is that tight end David Ajimu suffered a season-ending broken leg in practice, which presumably ends his career unless he's given a medical redshirt for this year and another year of eligibility. Right after his apartment burned down in a fire.
Really
rough week for David Ajimu.
It was
so our hearts go out to him. And then when the depth charts came out on Monday, I think the one big surprise there is Jesse Sosabe being listed as a starter at left guard ahead of Andrew Kirkland, who was a starter on last year's team.
But I think Peterson said that Kirkland's going to get a lot of reps at different positions on the line, and so he'll...
Kind of a sixth linebacker?
Yeah.
So lineman, too.
Yeah, sixth lineman.
So should we go through the roster, right? Should we do a full Husky season preview?
Okay.
Are we starting at quarterback?
I guess the big question here with Jake Browning is how much of what we saw from him in the second half of the season was... injury versus arm strength, I guess, is the question here. And hopefully a lot of injury.
Notably worse, right?
Yeah. There's something different in the last few games.
It was a little disappointing to find out that the injury was after the USC game. Because he looked poor and bad in that USC game.
We're planning to write that one.
I mean, if we're being real here.
He did say that he felt like he has had his best camp so far.
Which, I mean, he should, you know. I mean, he... only had 1 year of starting experience coming into last year. Drake Browning was way ahead of schedule last year. Let's be clear. Way ahead of schedule. So, you know, if he even maintains that, let alone improves on it, then the Huskies in good shape there.
But at quarterback, you look around the Pac-12, there are a lot of experienced quarterbacks, right?
Are there?
Well, there are a couple of notable experienced quarterbacks. How about that?
Okay.
Especially in the South, between Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, right?
Yes, in L.A. That's what you're saying here.
But Jake Browning is coming in on his third year as a starting quarterback, having led a team already to the college football playoff.
Yeah.
There's basically not that much more that Jake Browning can do at this point. It just seems to me like...
I think there's more he can do. I don't know if I'd go that far.
Much more. There's only two more games that he could win.
Yeah.
Right?
But that's an important difference.
And if he did that, that would be something that no Pac-12 team has ever done.
That's true, and I'm not saying I'm counting on him to do that. But I think he can play, he can be more effective under pressure than he was last year when the Huskies were really challenged.
That's the other impressive thing, though, is that there's still room for growth from the quarterback who led his team to the college football playoff.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, look, we're all excited about this season. All right, at running back.
This is my favorite position. Say what you were going to say.
Huskies return Miles Gaskin as a starter. LeVon Coleman flirted with the NFL.
So lucky there.
Like, easily a starting caliber player who is the number two, the 1A perhaps. And then also, you know, have good depth at the position. It looks like a place where you might see a freshman get action with Salvan Ahmed, a true freshman. And then also redshirt freshman Sean McGrew getting his first taste of playing time this year. So I feel very good about the running back position.
Got a lot of depth. Got a lot of depth.
I mean, seeing it running back, Miles Gaskin or LeVon Coleman?
Yeah.
Come on. It's too much. What have you heard so far in camp, Katie, about especially Salvan Ahmed?
He's a playmaker. He's fast. And I don't think they have really said how they're going to use him exactly. So it may not be fully at running back.
Yeah, you may see some fly action from him,
so
I think.
We'll see how that works out and shakes out with him getting playing time, because it's going to be hard, you know, behind Coleman and Gaskin.
Well, hopefully early in the season, there'll be some opportunities to get some playing time and blow out games. But yeah, I mean, you know, Gaskin, as good as he was last year, 5.8 yards per carry. Then LeVon Coleman, 7.5 yards per carry. That's so good.
That's three quarters
of a first down every time he carried the football. That's ridiculous.
That shouldn't happen. It's almost like I forgot that both of those guys were coming back.
And good enough depth that the Huskies were able to move Jahmon Dotson to play on cornerback now. So that'll be interesting to see.
John Rostam, huh?
Yes. At wide receiver, the Huskies do lose John Ross, but bring back still a comfortable amount of depth with Dante Pettis. Chico McClatcher is kind of the slot guy. And then at the other wide receiver spot, you know, a couple of guys listed as potential starters there between Andre Bichelia and Quentin Pounds.
Well, and Braden Linius is
Braden
listed
Linius.
As the...
Yes.
And it's a position where you were talking about Salvin Ahmed losing some explosiveness, right? Because John Ross is going, they might lose that downfield threat, and maybe that's a place where we'll see somebody like Ahmed getting a downfield opportunity.
Seems reasonable.
Because, you know, Dante Pettis is a great receiver, but he's not necessarily the same kind of deep threat that John Ross was.
Yeah. Tight end, a position where I think the Huskies are deep but don't necessarily have that one guy at this point. Drew Sample and Will Disley listed as co-starters there, and a place where you will see...
I think Drew Sample's got Vance McDonald potential.
No. is that a good or a bad thing?
This could be Luke Wilson and Vance McDonald.
And a place where you will see a true freshman see action, particularly after the Ajimu injury, in highly recruited Eastside Catholic product Hunter Bryan.
And Chris Peterson, I think, I don't know if you have notes on this, Katie, or if it's just on Spencer Strassmore, outlined some of the freshmen who are going to be playing this year. And Hunter Bryant stood out to me as one of them.
Yep.
So on the line, incredible experience and depth for the Huskies, bringing back starters
so
at all five
this team.
Positions, basically.
This offensive line.
And then you're deep enough that, again, Andrew Kirkland is a senior experienced starter, can be now considered your sixth lineman. Really strong at both tackle spots, I think, with Trey Adams and Kalen McGarry there. So I feel so comfortable with this offensive line, which is weird to feel as a Seattle football fan.
It's pretty crazy. And I mean... There's a lot of turnover for Husky lines. Seahawks have not had a good line for a long time. And we did notice that against Alabama, which granted it's Alabama, that it felt like the Huskies were physically outdueled on the line. And I think having all of these guys back for another year could make a difference. I think they could physically overpower some people this year.
That would be nice to see. All right, turning our attention to the defensive side of the football.
This offense is insane.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great.
Oh my God.
I mean... Other than John Ross, basically everyone is back.
Which it's a big loss, but...
It's a big, huge loss. But yeah, I mean, you count on improvement from everyone else. That's kind of the way college football works.
And Miles Gaskin. All right, they'll never need to pass the ball. They can be like a 1940s offense.
Let's not go that far. So the three defensive linemen for the Huskies, and they're basically a 3-4 alignment. The aforementioned Vita Vea. Greg Gaines, who you also feel really good about, is an experienced junior. And then Jalen Johnson, someone who's had injuries the last couple of years, came on strong at the end of the last season, including in the Peach Bowl against Alabama. And this year steps into a starting spot at that, you know, defensive end.
I remember being really high on him when he first came in, and I'm excited to see him maybe reach all year. So
at the two rush linebacker spots, you've got Benin Potoahe as one starter, and then on the other side, as you mentioned earlier, Connor O'Brien and Tevis Bartlett listed as co-starters. Maybe the one interesting thing on the depth chart is the backups to Potoahe. You have Justice Warren, who saw action last year as a freshman, and then redshirt freshman Ryan Bowman worked his way onto the two deep, one of the handful of freshmen that's listed on the depth chart. So
so good. I mean Vita Vea is going into the season as a first round pick candidate, right?
Yep.
If you look at every single player on this roster, the most likely of them to be a first round pick is Vita Vea.
That's probably true. Yeah,
somebody who's going to be disruptive on the line,
I mean, in the tradition of Danny Shelton. So
Something just seeing, I'm just so excited about this. I just can't believe it. It's almost like too much. Seeing experienced players as starters with not freshmen behind them. This is what we were building towards with Chris Peterson, right?
Right.
This is the season that when Chris Peterson was hired that we were pointing toward. Not last year when they happened to go to the college football playoff and play Alabama as the number four team in the country, right? That was unexpected.
That was very unexpected.
Can I just throw some cold water on this?
No, not yet. Not yet. Okay.
Okay.
You're going to throw your cold water. I just don't have any cold water.
All right. Then
the only cold water is that they have to play Stanford on the road.
We'll get to that. We've talked about one middle linebacker spot. The other middle linebacker spot, another senior alongside Victor Kishan-Bieria. Yeah.
Right there.
I'm excited about that.
So then let's talk about the cornerback position.
Is this your cold water position or just in general?
That's one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Husky's having to replace two starters ineffectively since Buda Baker was basically the nickel corner. Effectively all three players at
three
this
starters.
So
you're talking about just at corner?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the secondary in general.
All right. So Jordan Miller and Byron Murphy listed is the two starters at cornerback. They don't have a nickel position on here, so it's a little tough to say exactly how they're going to go with there. But Miles Bryant and then the aforementioned converted running back Jamon Dotson listed as two backups. And this is another position where you can expect to see a true freshman see some action with highly recruited Elijah Molden, who passed on Oregon to come to UW, his dad's alma mater.
Yeah, it is.
So I mean, this is a place where the Huskies saw turnover a couple years ago after Coach Pete's first season, losing, players to the NFL. Yeah.
Marcus Peters is listed as
was he the defensive rookie of the year?
He was the defensive rookie of the year, but then also there is that like NFL 1000 or whatever that came out a couple weeks ago, and he's like number 22 in the NFL.
That's a little much.
I think he might have been higher than Richard Sherman. He was close to it. Look, people don't really understand how to evaluate players, but he was very high.
Anyway, but the Huskies able to move on from that. They bring in Sidney Jones and Kevin King as starters, and those guys both end up as...
Who we expected very little from.
Top 33 picks in the NFL draft.
Wait, Sidney Jones, was he in the top 33?
No, I guess he was later in the second round. So
but if Sidney Jones hadn't been injured, would have been in that range.
Yeah. So it's a place where they've shown the ability to, regenerate, basically, from within. And I think that's something that's going to happen again. But, there are some question marks there early in the season in particular.
And this is the only position. You can't necessarily count on this next generation, Jordan Miller, Byron Murphy, being the next Sidney Jones and Kevin King. But also, you kind of think maybe they can coach some quarterbacks.
It seems to be the track record so far.
I mean, going into the season, Sidney Jones and Kevin King are going into 2 years ago. They weren't super highly recruited players, right? They were players that this coaching staff turned into players that were going to be drafted highly in the NFL, which again is what we expected of Coach Pete.
And then safety, you have Taylor Rapp, who was one of the stars of last year. Unexpected stars is a true freshman getting playing time and being the star of the Pac-12 championship game with his turnover creation and then JoJo McIntosh at strong safety.
Who started for much of the season.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So what's your cold water, Katie?
I mean, I was, I base this all on people that I follow on Twitter. I follow Kevin King, and I see him suiting up for the Packers.
Is Kevin King talking shit about the Seahawks or about the Huskies?
No, I'm just saying.
Well, he might be talking shit about the Seahawks. They got the game coming up.
I follow Buda Baker, and I see him doing things for the Cardinals. I see Elijah Qualls for the Eagles, and Sidney Jones eventually doing things for the Eagles. Saul Mooching doing things for professional rugby teams. And,
your cold water has to do with Saul Mooching? Not even in the NFL?
No, but
Buda Baker is one, though, that there's no replacement for Buda Baker here.
He's a unique talent.
And Buda Baker could be, here's if you have to have cold water, he could be an Earl Thomas-like player where losing him might make every single other player worse.
That's what I'm afraid of. You don't, like, when the Legion of Boom loses a player, the entire thing suffers.
Earl Thomas.
been worse without Cam Chancellor, too. You saw that stat about the record when the entire Legion of Boom starts the last 2 years, right?
It's like you and me and Mina.
And Ben.
Anyway,
I don't remember.
I do think that Buda Baker is such a unique talent that, and he can't be replaced on this team.
But I will say the difference between that and Earl Thomas going out is it's not in the middle of the season. Like, they have an entire off season. They have spring ball. They have fall camp to prepare for this.
And two experienced safeties to play instead.
So.
And I mean, to counter my own points.
Like, well, Buda Baker, look, let's be clear. Buda Baker was not a safety. He was a nickel corner. The Huskies basically exclusively played nickel last year, which is why it's ridiculous to talk about two starters and middle linebacker. They just need to update the depth chart. The depth chart should add nickel line cornerback and take away one of the middle linebacker spots. It's ridiculous in 2017. Ran over it.
Okay, so what were we saying, Katie? We don't know who the nickel corner is going to be. I feel like we keep talking over you. I'm sorry.
I was just talking about how I've seen all these players in the NFL. We've lost a lot of players to the NFL. And we can't guarantee that, you know, the people that are coming in to replace them are going to be at that same level of production. Until we see this first game, I'm not going to be...
You're going to be sold on after if they beat Rutgers?
I just want to see how they play.
Yeah, I mean, we are definitely counting a lot on the success they had in 2014, yes, replacing the guys off the 2000. Yeah.
And they lost so many players to the NFL. And you said that was 2013?
Yes.
Right? There's Kakaha.
Yep.
Danny Shelton.
Yep.
Marcus Peters.
Yep.
Right? All drafted within the first three rounds.
You're missing someone else, too.
There's a fourth one also. But they lost a lot of talent to the NFL. And managed to be a better defense without those players. Can we expect that again?
Which, in fairness, they probably underachieved given that talent in 2013, but they were trying to adjust to a new scheme.
We had some questions about Coach Pete that year, and he converted John Ross to be a cornerback. The number 8 pick in the draft. He made him a cornerback.
And that's my other cold water. I don't think people are valuing John Ross enough.
That's fair. You
know, there's definitely an explosiveness.
Are we going to be able to guarantee that Browning could just kind of like
Shaq
throw
Thompson,
it up?
By the way, was the other
oh,
guy.
Oh, yeah, I remember him.
Oh, the other guy.
Good at football.
Yes. Wow. Shaq and Buda.
It's amazing they had that much talent on the team. Buda wasn't on that team. Buda was part of the replacements to them. Yeah, I mean, I think that's legitimate. I mean, the good news is, again, it's going to be... They don't have to go right into the deep water right away. They get to wade in pretty...
Okay.
According to John Wilner, we never really get into the deep water.
That may be fair. I think at Stanford is
one
pretty
game.
Deep.
There's one very deep water game. Look, but tell us about,
be other good teams.
Tell us about Rutgers first, though.
All right, let's talk a little about Rutgers. So last year, Rutgers had...
What are we at? Are we like an hour 45 here? This is like a TBA podcast.
Not quite. But close. Rutgers last year was ranked 125th in the nation in FPI efficiency on offense. There are 130 teams. So that's bad. That's very bad. So extensive changes for them on offense. They brought in former Minnesota coach Jerry Kill, who had to leave that job because he had some issues with seizures.
Interesting.
As their offensive coordinator. And then they're going to have grad transfers starting at both quarterback with Kyle Bolin, who was at Louisville and lost his job to some guy named Lamar Jackson. And then also at running back with Miami transfer Gus Edwards. So Bolin was actually started off and on in 2015 when Jackson was a freshman. And you know, he was okay. 8.4 yards per attempt is pretty good, but 57% completions. And he was intercepted on 4.4% of his passes, which is pretty bad. That's something the Huskies can look to make some big plays there in terms of turnovers. Edwards averaged 5.3 yards per carry in his three seasons at Miami, which is more or less the same as Rutgers returning players. At wide receiver, they bring back Janarian Grant, who played 4 games last season before suffering a broken ankle that allowed him to get a medical redshirt and come back for a 5th year. He had 9 catches for 56 yards and 6 carries for 28 yards against UW in last year's season opener. The Huskies won 48-13. In that game, the Huskies had 3 passing touchdowns of 30-plus yards, 2 of them to Ross and 1 for Chico McClatcher. Also had 2 return touchdowns. So I would expect a big priority for Rutgers to be taking away those big plays. And I think
Where was Chico on the depth chart, by the way?
He's the starter. They've listed 3 wide receivers.
Okay, maybe I missed him on there. Because that is, I mean, definitely a source of explosiveness.
Yes. Yeah. So I think that could be at the expense of their run defense. Last year, they actually held the Huskies to 91 yards on 30 carries in the season opener, which we were probably fretting about the run offense at that point. I mean, Coleman got fewer carries than Jamon Dotson, who was in there a lot of the time in the fourth quarter. But I think the Huskies should be much more effective
it's
on the ground
to
this time
fret about something.
Have you heard how Kyle Bolin is basically the next Russell Wilson?
No.
Who said that?
And I'm overstating it, but Chris Ash was, I guess, the defensive...
Coach.
Yeah, his coach now was apparently the defensive coordinator at Wisconsin when Russell Wilson played there. And he likened...
managed to see the similarity between his grad transfer.
Likened Kyle Bolin's ability to come over late in the timeline, learn the playbook, have his teammates all rally around him. And so basically, we are playing Russell Wilson in this game.
Did he also wear a durag? All right, can we talk a little bit about Russell Wilson's stats at North Carolina State?
Yes.
You're throwing cold water.
You know what? His yards per attempt were actually surprisingly terrible at North Carolina State. Maybe this is right.
Wow.
It wasn't until he got to Wisconsin that he exploded.
Yeah, everybody needs a second chance.
He went from 6.8 yards per attempt as a junior at NC State to 10.3.
Wow.
As a senior at Wisconsin. He completed 73% of his passes and had a 33 touchdowns to 4 interceptions as a senior.
Wait, who's drafted ahead of him?
A lot of guys.
I want to know.
Was there a punter? Yeah, Jacksonville took a punter over Russell Wilson. That's a thing that happened.
I was thinking of Roberto Aguayo. Sorry.
He was not drafted at Russell
he
Wilson.
He would have been, though.
Probably would have been. But yeah, that would be a significant problem for this game if he is Russell Wilson.
Yeah, lot of guys are as good as Russell Wilson.
I'd just like to clarify, I don't actually think that. But that's what they're telling Kyle Bolin to motivate him and see what he can do for the team.
So I remember one time watching the movie Hoop Dreams, and one of the coaches in the movie Hoop Dreams had previously coached Isaiah Thomas. And so every single player who was remotely good was compared to Isaiah Thomas.
That's kind of what's going
on. That's Chris Ash. And he just happens to be a grad transfer, so he's the next Russell Wilson. It's like the kid from Hoop Dreams. Wait, do you know what his name was?
Well, there was a couple guys. Arthur Agee.
He wasn't Isaiah Thomas. I think it was Arthur Agee who's the one. He was not the next Isaiah Thomas.
Suffice it to say, not the next Isaiah Thomas.
Anyway.
Okay, do we want to talk big picture? Okay, I guess chances of victory this week?
So we're going to be welcoming each week during the football season, college and NFL, we're going to be welcoming a new third Pelton brother for every week. This week it is Katie, who has been both the third Pelton brother for predicting this Husky game and then also for somehow calling the upset for Unita Burger, which I kidded, that happened 3 hours ago.
That was almost a Rutgers over UW magnitude upset.
We should be nervous.
Am I getting paid double for this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. We pay all of our
double
guests.
Nothing.
Okay.
You got 3 different beers.
That's true.
But we kind of talked through what you expect to see happen. But what do you see happening in this game? And then also percentage chance of victory.
I mean, you know, I'm the noted pessimist, but I'm still going to go with UW in this game. Okay. I think this is a fairly pessimistic prediction to go 85% chance of victory.
That's pretty pessimistic.
I just want to see everything on the field once before I get all up on this hype train. Apparently, you know, Mel Kiper said we're going to win the national championship.
That's ridiculous, but we'll get to that
okay.
in a second.
That was Mel Kiper who said that.
Was it?
Sounds right.
He also talked bad about Russell Wilson, so we'll see what he has to say about this quarterback for Rutgers.
I would like to see nobody get injured and a lot of our depth guys get some time playing. So that's what I'd like to see.
You should get a lot early in the season. All right, your chance of victory, Tristan.
I don't know. I mean, I'm always so nervous about every game, especially when it's on the road. I feel like it's probably about a 90% chance.
That's about where I was going to go to, 90%. Football Pyrenix gives the Huskies a 94% chance of victory in this one. All right, let's talk through the schedule a little bit. As we mentioned, a soft landing after this trip to Rutgers, which is a game I think the Huskies scheduled thinking it was going to be their A game. And then it turned out to maybe be a B minus or a C plus.
It was Greg Schiano there when they scheduled it.
I don't know if it was that far back.
I don't know. I don't know in what era they thought this would be the A game, but okay.
No, I mean, Rutgers actually did pretty well at first under Schiano's replacement. It was later in his tenure that things began to backslide. Next week, they return home to host Montana and then Fresno State in the last. And former friend Jeff Tedford will be back at UW.
Oh, man.
Last non-conference game.
Also, if you want to throw some cold water, you can say that the entire offense ran well last year.
That was one of my takes.
that's strong.
It's just Jeff Tedford.
We have a new co-offensive coordinator.
Who's that?
Matt Lubick?
Oh.
I'm probably not saying that right.
I've definitely read an article about that at some point this offseason and proceeded
to. And you know the thing? Chris Peterson was never a good offensive coach before Jeff Tedford was around.
That's very true.
Huskies start Pac-12 play with a pair of road games, traveling to Colorado in a game I'll be attending, and then at Oregon State.
The Colorado game's still a little bit scary.
A little tricky. Then home for Cal.
Oregon State is not. I don't know if you watched them against Colorado State this weekend. That is not scary.
I watched the score. At Arizona State, home for UCLA and Jim Mora's return with Josh Chosen Rosen, and then hosting Oregon, a team the Huskies still have not beat at Husky Stadium
in every game is scary.
15 years? I don't know when the last time was, but it was a long time ago, suffice it to say. And then at Stanford, the game that will probably more than any other decide the season, and then finish with two in a row at home, Utah, and then Washington State the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So
they're not playing on Friday this year?
No, they're not playing on Friday this year.
Really?
Works out well for me because I can go to the Phil Knight tournament.
Big three. What is the game that you're going to?
There's a Phil Knight tournament where like most of the country's best teams are going to be playing in Portland. So I'm very excited about that.
Wow.
All right, so FBI gives them about a 30% chance of getting to the Stanford game undefeated. Which
is not bad.
It actually feels a little bit low, but
no,
you've got enough chance of winning each of those games individually, even though the Huskies will be favored in all of them substantially.
There's still some difficult games there. I mean, look, going into the season, the Huskies are actually incredibly lucky for a couple of reasons, right? They don't really play a particularly difficult non-conference game, which in the past they've played some.
I mean, that could hurt them in the playoff selection. That definitely will be held against them if they're in a tight battle.
If they win the games, it won't matter.
Fair. But they don't face USC.
They don't face USC, which, look, they'll probably... If USC is as good as we think USC is going to be, they'll have to play them eventually.
If they can get that far.
Well, sure. We're talking best-case scenario.
To me, Stanford should be the favorite in the Pac-12 North by virtue of hosting the Huskies.
But also, they're lucky because most of the difficult games that they play are at home. They play Oregon at home. They play UCLA at home. Their road games, you've got Colorado, right? Who looks like they're going to be much, much worse this year than they were last year.
Huge losses from last year's team. Tedrick Thompson was key to that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, Tedrick Thompson, everything ran through him. but they're losing both their quarterback and a good chunk of their defense, which is kind of what, especially their secondary, which is what made Colorado run. Right, but hosting those UCLA and those Oregon games, and then also Wazoo at the end of the season.
Yeah,
they're hosting three very difficult games that if they're on the road, they could hypothetically not be favored to win.
And Stanford's schedule favorable to the standpoint that they host UW, but beyond that, they're on the road at USC on September 9th, a game that will go a long ways in determining their season.
That's so early. I can't believe that's happening on September 9th.
And then they also visit Wazoo, which could be a tricky game for them the week before they host UW.
I just do not like that game. I mean, that is a game that could be deciding the Pac-12 happening on
September 9th.
September 9th.
Yeah, I know. I'm right there with you. So,
but I mean, it could be that UW, because of that, right? UW could lose to Stanford and still win the Pac-12 North.
That is very possible if they take care of business in all other games and Stanford just tripped up a couple of times. Interestingly, FBI now, because they dominated Rice 62-7.
I almost, when I was doing my Mariners hot takes, said the Yankees are Stanford and the Mariners are Rice. That would have been just for Ben B.
They are now favored going on the road at USC by FPI. 58.4% favorites to win that game.
Wow.
Without Christian McCaffrey. So, we shall see.
I mean, it's such an important Pac-12 game happening so early in the season. You know, we'll get a very good sense of what the other real contenders look like.
Yeah, I'm very excited to watch that game, although we'll probably be tailgating, I guess. As one does.
What, Montana for Fresno State?
That would be the Montana game, yes. Any other thoughts on the Husky season as a whole?
I'm very excited.
Yeah. It's weird. We have barely talked about them, but now there's just really not been much going on in fall camp, which I guess is a good thing.
Well, we've talked about this before, but hopefully we don't have to talk about them a ton until Pac-12 season starts.
Man, Bryce Love had 180 yards rushing. Stanford is so scary. They're the favorite.
Is Foster Sarrell starting for them?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
He wouldn't be starting for UW there, though. That's the thing.
Probably not, no.
He would be, I mean, there's a chance that you look at these tackle positions that he wouldn't have started for 2 years.
I think they would have found a way to get him on the field at some point.
Over who? Trey Adams or Caleb McGarry?
I think they would have found a way to get him on the field at some point, whether you move him to guard or whatever.
He would have been a cornerback.
Yeah.
Like if it worked with John Ross. It's like they did John Ross, Jermaine Dotson, Foster Sarrell. But no, Stanford's scary.
Well,
we've got plenty of time before that happens. Look, a lot can happen before that.
Yeah, the world
we have no idea what the world is going to look like before that.
All right, on that note,
thanks for listening. If you made it this far, thanks for listening.